And welcome to Soccer Today. I'm Dwayne Rollins. This is another of our pre-recorded interviews to give Kevin a well-deserved week off. Kevin is enjoying a holiday away in another part of this country, hopefully not listening to this broadcast. I'm Dwayne Rollins, as I said. I recorded this list last week, so I'm working away somewhere else, but this voice was from last week, and it was me and Rudy Schuler having a conversation. It touched on all things MLS Canada, basically. We ended it with a couple questions. We asked about Orlando. I asked about Orlando. He answered. And I asked about Wayne Rooney. So there's a little bit of a general MLS in here as well, but it's primarily focused on the three Canadian Major League Soccer teams. All right, on that note, let's take a quick break. Come back with another pre-recorded version of Soccer Today.
And welcome back to the Soccer Today podcast. I almost said the Five Rings podcast. Not sure about why I did that. But joining me on the line is Rudy Schuler. In this week of interview podcasts done to allow poor Kevin Laramie, who produced 6,324 podcasts during the World Cup, a week off with his fiance in Halifax. How you doing, Rudy?
Not too bad. Is that number legit, or are you just exaggerating?
I might be exaggerating a little bit, but with Kevin, he was doing Tour de France podcast as well during the World Cup. So, you know, it's his hobby. You got to have a hobby. Anyway, yeah. I know how daily podcast, just as like the guy on the other end of the line, that was enough for me. Oh, my God. Anyway, speaking of the World Cup, it's been a bit, you know, by the time people listen to this, it'll be a couple weeks on. So we won't go into depth, but did it surprise you? Were you, did it go as you thought it would? What were your general thoughts on it?
Well, it surprised me how wide open most of the games were, to be quite honest. It was a lot more attacking than other recent World Cups have been, especially in the knockout stages. You know, that's usually when teams tighten up at the back and games get a little more cagey. But what we saw, especially in the final, of course, is teams looking to attack and having an identity and sticking to it. And I think that that boded well for everybody watching. It was one of the most exciting World Cups I can ever remember. We got a few new stars out of it. Of course, Luka Modric isn't a new star, but I think he put himself up on a higher pedestal than he already was. You know, playing for Real Madrid and starring for Real Madrid, he's already at the top of his game. But we saw that he was the best player in the World Cup, and of course, the breakout star was Kylian Mbappe. And I think he represents a new kind of style of play that we saw in the tournament. The quick counterattacking, just incredible pace and also incredible engine on him, which we saw through a few other teams as well. And of course, he was the best example of that. But I think overall, it was a very good tournament to watch from an entertainment standpoint and from a technical standpoint. And we can only hope that, in the desert in 4 years, it'll be the same thing.
Well, yeah, we can only hope. Mbappe, I like to refer to him as the French Alphonso Davies.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go. And as we record this, and again, these are pre-recorded so that we can take a week off, both Kevin and I, next week. I'm doing the heavy lifting this week to give him a break. But hasn't officially been announced yet, but Carl Robinson all but put it out there. Many people are reporting that he has moved to Bayern Munich. So we're going to assume, for the purposes of this conversation, that he is going to Bayern Munich. So quick thoughts on that. Is it the right move at the right time for this player?
Wow. The move was going to happen, you know, regardless of whether it was to Bayern or another team. It was going to happen at the time that it happened. Maybe it wouldn't have been, signed, sealed, delivered in the summertime ahead of a January move. Of course, we all know that he cannot technically play for a team outside of North America, I guess, outside of the Canada/US system until his 18th birthday. Until the transfer window opens after his 18th birthday, that's January 1st. So we knew that that's when he was going to move. I mean, everybody knew that. Everybody saw the writing on the wall. I'm sure the Whitecaps were, you know, already knew that, and they were already putting feelers out for teams that wanted Davies. But the fact that it was Bayern Munich, of all teams, it's a bit of a mild surprise, but, it's not too much of a surprise. They have a history of giving younger players time. I'm not sure what exactly Alphonso Davies expects out of this move in the short term, because I don't see him, getting too many minutes come January, obviously. It's hard to say because he's had such a, his trajectory has been basically a straight line upwards. So it's hard to really count him out, in 6 months' time that he will be getting substantial time in Bayern Munich, because who's to say he's not? But, the general thinking is that he's probably not quite there yet. But, from everything I've heard and everything I've read of him saying is that he does not want to go out on loan. He wants to play for the team that buys him. If that's the case, and if Bayern knows that, then, maybe we see him in the Bundesliga far sooner than many of us thought, even though we all thought he would be there eventually. Maybe not the Bundesliga, but one of the top five Euro leagues. He needed to get out of MLS at the end of this year, just because I think he would have stagnated, but I think he's already shown that he needs to be challenged a little bit more. We saw that over the past 4 or 5 months now. It's amazing how much he's progressed since the beginning of the year and since last year as well. It's hard not to have your doubts on what he's going to see when he gets over there, because is he going to get playing time? Is he going to be loaned down to a lower division that he didn't want to do? I don't know. It's tough to make that call. But, on the surface of it, this is a Canadian kid who's going to the biggest club in Germany, one of the top five or six biggest clubs in the world. It's only been done once before by another unnamed Canadian kid who didn't actually play for Canada. This one does play for Canada, so we can all be happy about that. And, he's the guy blazing the trail. Now, in the short term, from a Canadian national team perspective, hopefully that gives pause to another Canadian kid at a top five club in Europe, Balu Tabla, of course, to say, hey, maybe I should give Canada another try here, because, if this is the kind of talent that's coming out of Canada now, then maybe, the Canadian program isn't I wouldn't say as worthless, but as easy to pass over as he originally thought it was, because, he's Balu Tabla, that is leaning towards his home country of Ivory Coast, although his adopted country, Canada, he's already played for and been the under-20 player of the year a couple of times. So it's the harbinger of better things to come. But for Davies, it's a great move. I just hope that he gets the playing time that he deserves and needs to grow, because we've seen what he can do in MLS, and it's a big step up. But I can't put it past this kid right now, although I do think that it's too much too soon to expect him to be starting in the Bundesliga from the go.
Fair enough. And I mean, the other option, of course, the loan option, I think Davies could probably be convinced if he's going on loan to a lower level or lower table Bundesliga team or something, he might be might think a little differently when he gets over there if the playing time is there and the competition pushes there. There's been a lot of good fortune for Canadians in the Bundesliga over the years, although more in the era when you and I, Rudy, were first starting to really cheer for this team. It's been a while. Do you think it's the right league for a young player to go and develop in?
Oh, it's a great league. I mean, you look at, just the sheer breadth of talent around that league. And it's not just, obviously Bayern is the big boys, and all the European leagues kind of have that albatross of having one or two teams just dominate. But when you look at, teams like Borussia Dortmund, Werder Bremen, Schalke, there's teams that develop youngsters. Ultimately, they end up developing the youngsters for Bayern or for other clubs around Europe. But from my, untrained eye when it comes to the Bundesliga, because I can admit that I don't watch nearly as much Bundesliga as I should. But from what I've seen, from what I've noted over the years, is that they are open to playing kids a lot more than maybe some other leagues are. Especially in some of the smaller clubs, maybe not so much Bayern. Although, like I said off the top, I do think Bayern has a reputation of bringing younger players along. Thomas Müller, who's not a younger kid anymore, but he was when he started out there, and he became a world class player. That's just an example. But it's really tough to kind of handicap whether it's going to be a good deal for Canadians now, because as you mentioned, Canadians kind of have a long history in the Bundesliga in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, the Paul Stelperis and Rob Friends and those type of players. Even Patrice Bernier was in the second Bundesliga. And there's a few other kids that are now, you know, fully grown adults or even middle-aged players that, you know, got some playing time there. Julian de Guzman's another one, of course. Got some playing time there. And we've seen that Germany is open. Yeah, Kevin McKenna, of course. How did I forget about Kevin McKenna as well? Germany seems to be more open out of all the big five leagues. Germany seems to be the one most open to Canadians. I know that a lot of it has to do with labor laws and whatnot. Canadians aren't considered internationals there, so that helps Canadians get their foot in the door. But even at the top level, you've seen more Canadians in the Bundesliga than I think in any other of the top five leagues. So I don't think it's a coincidence that maybe that's where Davies is going. I think they're more open to that. Of course, Davies is his ceiling is much higher than any of those other players I've even mentioned. So I think he could have been kind of slid in anywhere. But I think in a broader term and a broader spectrum, I think that the fact that he's going there, I don't think it's too much of a coincidence because, again, I mentioned again that there was another Canadian 20 years ago that did it at the same age or even younger. So Bayern already has that, history of letting Canadian players come in and prove themselves. So, they're not going to be too scared and put off by the fact that Canada is not a traditional country in terms of soccer. So, maybe this opens some doors for other Canadian players down the road. Again, you know, this Davies deal, it's not just about Alphonso Davies. It's about what happens down the road with other kids looking at Alphonso Davies and maybe being inspired by him, but also other clubs around Europe looking at Alphonso Davies and saying, hey, you know, if he grew up in Canada and played with and against other Canadian players and he became this type of player, this type of talent, maybe there's some diamonds in the rough now that we should take a look at and pay some more attention to. So hopefully this opens some more doors for Canadian players out there.
Yeah, I will remind listeners that the player had mentioned that you referred to a couple times, the Calgary Foothills product that went to the Bayern Munich, was in fact Canadian for his entire duration at Bayern Munich. It was only when he went to Manchester United that he decided to become English, so we'll leave it at that.
I like how we haven't actually mentioned his name yet. It's kind of like Voldemort, you know? You don't speak his name out loud.
Especially amongst voyagers of a certain age, Rudy, which I think
right.
You and I were both in that range. Anyway, let's move back over to this side of the pond now. Well, obviously we are sort of there, but in terms of the play this year, one of the surprising runs of the past little while that caught me completely off guard is the play of the Montreal Impact over the past month or so. Now, putting aside again that we're recording this for the weekend's games, this is one of the hottest teams in the league. What do you think the key to their run has been, and is this sustainable in your mind?
Well, I mean, is it sustainable? I guess we'll find out. I do think that they were helped out by the fact that they played a few easier teams during that run, and that's not discounting the run that they put on, because you can only beat who's in front of you. You know, that's the whole cliche. But I do think that a lot of it has to do with Remy Gard kind of getting his feet wet in MLS and figuring out what the league's about, what his player pool is about, and also like the players he brought in, the type of players he should bring in. He's had some hits and misses already with the players that he's brought in. So I feel that it was kind of just a general feeling out process for the new coaching staff and the players underneath them. So, Remy Gard has been highly regarded as a coach who's, astute tactically and works well with younger players and likes to kind of build a system and a tactical base that he sticks to. So, if that's all true about him, then it takes a few months to do that. So I think now we're a few months into this Remy Gard era. You know, he wasn't hired too far before the season started. You know, it was only a couple months. So he needed a little bit of lead time to get all of that sorted. So I think that's what you're seeing now. They're playing a lot more organized than they were, at the beginning of the season when they just looked like an absolute dumpster fire. Now they're looking a little bit more organized. They're defensively a lot more sound. And I think we're seeing a little bit more offense as well. It's not all running through Ignacio Piatti now. You're seeing other guys kind of take the load a little bit off the Argentine, because you can't just have everything run through one player. I feel that they're taking advantage of what's in front of them and using that momentum to beat better teams as well. Because it's not just powder puff teams that they've been beating now. They've been playing well against better opponents recently. So whether or not it's sustainable, this is MLS. You know, it's tough to say. I don't feel that Montreal on paper is one of the best teams in the East. I feel that they were always going to be fighting for that fourth, fifth, or sixth spot, and I think that's where they're going to end up at the end of the year. They're going to be fighting for those last playoff spots. They're not going to be, you know, they're not Atlanta. They're not New York City FC. They're not the Red Bulls. So the fact that they are now where they should be, I think that's a testament to the entire organization kind of getting through those kind of early stages and being able to, you know, put it behind them and actually stick to the plan that Remy Gard has set out. Because I've been watching them the last few weeks, and they looked a lot more organized and a lot more. They feel like they have a lot more purpose to them than they did in the first few months. And you know, that's all you can really ask of a new coach that comes in from a completely different soccer culture.
All right, well, let's turn west on Highway 20 and drive about 4.5 hours. 4.5 hours down that road, it's going to turn into another number. But in respect to my friends in Quebec, I'll call it the Highway 20 for now. TFC has been in an emergency room for most of the season. You talked about tire fire a minute ago. Let's talk about an emergency room now. Recording time, but blah, blah, blah. The last game before Rudy and I spoke was the Chicago game, the 2-1 victory there. You called it a professional victory on Twitter, following the fact that it was a long time since we've seen that. I think there's a couple key reasons for that, and they were the return of a couple key players, and notably Josie Altidore. Now that you have these back, you know, 11 points, is it too big of a hole to dig?
It's actually 9 points now, isn't it? I'm not 100% sure. Either way, you know, they have a couple of games in hand. We're getting into this summer kind of stretch run now where you see teams either rise or fall, right? So TFC has to look at themselves and say, like, okay, this is a team that has to rise. Like, you know, we all know what they feel about themselves. They feel that they're a championship-caliber team. Of course, they are the champions. They were, you know, a couple of feet away from winning the CONCACAF Champions League and being the World Club Cup. And they still feel like they are that club. And they are still that club. When you look at the personnel, you know, there's been very little turnover from the off season. So it's a lot of the familiar faces, and the problem, of course, as you mentioned, is that it's been an emergency room. There's just been too many injuries to too many key players for far too long that even, you know, the vaunted TFC depth, it just couldn't handle it. Because, you know, depth is only supposed to be able to handle situations here and there, you know, take out two or three starters at a time. In certain situations, it's not supposed to be a wholesale change where you have, you know, 9 of the 11 are completely different from they were the previous week and the previous week before that, and so on and so forth. But that's what we've been seeing from TFC, which is unsustainable. So you know, now you're seeing guys come back, and you're seeing the injured list shrink considerably, and you're seeing a little bit more of what TFC is about. Now there's a lot of rust there. You know, you mentioned Josie Altidore, who is so valuable to the team, but you can see he was rusty. His touch was off a little bit. He was making runs that maybe he wouldn't, you know, he would have held off on a couple times. But for the most part, he was the same imposing presence that draws defenders away from Sebastian Giovinco. That is exactly what TFC needs. And he's only going to get better. And, you know, knock on wood that he stays healthy and the rest of the team stays healthy. But that, you know, as long as they all stay healthy, they're only going to get better. Now, you know, they've got themselves into a massive, massive hole. And even a team like TFC, even if they go on a run like they did last year, it may not be enough, to be quite honest. And they know that. They know that they are up against a mountain to climb here. But if there's any team that could do that, it's the team that we saw last year. So if they can regain some of last year's magic with the same players that they have last year and they're all healthy, then they'll be battling for that sixth or even fifth playoff spot, because they're not too far behind. They have a couple of games in hand. And as you mentioned, they have arguably the most valuable player in the league back now in Josie Altidore, and possibly the second most valuable player on the team in Chris Mavinga in the back line back. You know, that's no disrespect to Drew Moore, but I think that Chris Mavinga just makes a huge difference in the back line in terms of stability back there and athleticism, and allowing Justin Morrow and whoever's on the other side of the two wide the two fullbacks there to make runs like they do and be more consistent threats up front. So those two guys, plus, you know, Victor Vasquez and hopefully for their sake as well, Drew Moore coming back soon, and Auro and a couple others, as they start trickling back, you're going to see a little bit more of the TFC of 2017. I'm just not entirely sure it's going to be enough at this point because they are, as I mentioned, in a massive, massive hole.
I think they need to win 10 of the last 14. A mutual friend of ours has got $80 down on TFC to win the MLS Cup at 150-1. So he'll be buying the beers.
I can only guess who that mutual friend is.
So there you go. I actually put 10 down on it, so I'm pretty happy too if it happens. Because why not? Anyway, let's move all the way. We're going to turn on Highway 7 and go north, and then a whole long way west and talk about the Whitecaps now. If we'll continue my highway analogy. Look, to me, they spin their wheels. Sometimes they're okay, sometimes they're not very good, but they're kind of just there. Explain the Whitecaps to me, and is there any hope that they can become something more than just there?
I think the front office needs to be a little more ambitious than they've shown to be. You know, they've always shown just enough ambition to kind of appease their fan base, but it's never been enough to really become an elite team in the league. You know, they've always had DPs from day one, but the DPs have always been kind of the middling range. You know, they've never broken the bank. And you know what? Teams don't have to do that to succeed. You know, a team like Sporting KC doesn't do that, but they succeed. But I feel that they're much better coached, and I think that top to bottom, they have a much more cohesive philosophy team-wise than Vancouver does. But I think they just need a little bit more ambition. You know, we talked about Alfonso Davies off the top, and he's going to bring in a ton of money to this Whitecaps organization. You know, by the time this is put out to the world, he probably already would have brought in a ton of money to this organization. Now, MLS rules will restrict what they can do with that. You know, $750,000 can be used for general allocation money, so that can go into the general pot. And I just read up on the rules, so I'm pretty sure this is how it goes now. They can also spend as much of that money as they want on designated players. So all of a sudden now, they have money to burn. First of all, they need to replace Alfonso Davies' production. So maybe you get a wide player that they can put, you know, kind of like for like there. And, you know, they got to look all over the park. Where's the biggest need? You know, Kai Kamara is okay up front as long as he gets service. But he's not getting the service now. You know, you got Jordi Reyna, who I think is coming into his own in that team. But for the most part, I think it's a lot of average to slightly below average around them. And I think that you can improve a lot of players around the park. You know, maybe you can get a DP central midfielder that can run the show a little bit. Maybe you can improve the back line. You know, Kendall Watson's going to be, I don't know how much time he's got left in Vancouver. And the rest of the guys, you know, they're kind of supporting pieces. You know, I love Daniil Henry, but he's not going to be your rock back there. He needs another guy beside him to kind of direct him and to be the vocal leader. He's not the vocal leader. He's the athletic guy who does what the vocal leader says to do. So yeah, there's just so much that the Vancouver Whitecaps need to do. And I think it stems from the front office not being ambitious enough. And you see that. And you mentioned that they're kind of this middling team that, and they've always kind of been that, although, you know, they've had some good runs with Carl Robinson's first year, I believe it was, where they, you know, they were third overall, I think, in the league. Don't quote me on that, but I'm just kind of going off the top of my head. But other than that, you know, it's never been up to the potential that market deserves, because I feel that market is underserved, even compared to the other two Canadian markets in MLS. You know, we've seen Montreal go on a CONCACAF Champions League run. We've seen them do good things in the playoffs, and I think their ownership is a whole other kettle of fish when it comes to ambition and stepping in their own feet kind of thing. And, of course, we've seen TFC been the best team in the league and the worst team in the league in a matter of, you know, a year and a half. But at least they've kind of both hit those highs. We're still waiting for Vancouver to hit that high. You know, at least I am, because they've always been kings in the middle. And I think it's time now for them to look at themselves in the mirror and say, hey, you know, we've got an opportunity here with this Davies money to be – you know, at least a Seattle-type team, you know, that can spend a little bit more and allocate a little bit more resources to truly competing and truly making a run at the championship. Because I do think that they have a lot of supporting cast that can be there, but they need some of those game breakers. They don't have enough of those right now. And I think that's always been the case. They've always had, like, one game breaker, or maybe one or two at a time. You need a few more than that. I think TFC proved that last year, and I think going forward, you see that with Atlanta. They have two or three game breakers on their team, and New York City FC, and go down the list. Vancouver's never had that, so I think that's always been their problem, is that they've always had one or two really good players and maybe one game breaker, but no one around them that can really support them enough to take the pressure off. And it's kind of what we're seeing in Montreal with Piatti. They're figuring that out as well. So, yeah, that's always been my take on Vancouver, is that they've always been kind of satisfied with being competitive, but not satisfied with not wanting to do a little bit more to get themselves over the top.
I heard that Justin Miram linking to Vancouver, and it made sense to me in terms of Davies moving away and how they sort of spend money. So we'll see about that. But
yeah.
speaking of Miram, I want to talk about Orlando. I'm going to end with a Rooney question, but let's talk about Orlando for a second. I have long been very critical of what they do down there. They remind me of PFC in the bad old days. What are they doing down there? Do they know what they're doing?
Well, I mean, the standings would say no, right? You know, how many years now they've been in this league, and they've always kind of had, we're talking about a team with potential. Orlando has the potential to be one of the elite teams in this league. Just, you know, the fan base, they got a beautiful stadium. They can attract talent from, because, you know, everybody thinks about Florida, but Orlando is kind of a destination. You know, it's not Miami, but it can attract talent. And, you know, they attracted Kaká in their first year. That is incredible. That is the kind of talent they can attract at that city. So, it feels like they just throw things to the wall and see if they stick. And I also feel like they don't stick to a coach long enough to allow that coach to see through his vision. Now, maybe some of the coaches they had in the past were rightfully let go, but not all of them. You know, we've seen now what Adrian Heath can do when given a clean slate and a little bit of time in Minnesota. Maybe Jason Christ was in above his head a little bit when trying to build a team from scratch. I don't know. Maybe he still needs more time if another team was able to give him some time. But I don't think both of those guys should have been canned as fast as they were. It shows that I think their ownership expects a little too much too soon out of this team. They felt that they could be out of the gate like in Atlanta. I feel that they could have been if they had stuck to a plan that they had kind of built beforehand. But it didn't seem like that. It just seemed like they were reactionary rather than you know, going by whatever book they had written. So it feels like as long as that ownership is in place, that's just how they're going to be. Go on.
I was going to say, you're talking about TFC, right?
No, I'm talking about Orlando, the TFC of Florida.
And
TFC, if I was talking about TFC, it would be like the TFC pre-2014, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's what they are now. No, you're absolutely right to draw that parallel. But the difference is, I feel that it's the front office is a little too hands-on. I don't think TFC's front office was very hands-on in the bad old days. I feel that they were not hands-on enough when it came to certain coach/GMs in the early days. just to close off the point, I feel that we saw some front office squabbling between at the very top of the ownership group, and it ended up being one of the early owners left because he was going through divorce. So his wife, I think, took over the role. But then the two of them were also not getting along with the main Brazilian owner. And there was just a whole lot of stuff going on at the top, and that filtered through the organization. I know that Nicky Budilic, the GM down there, you know, he's a Canadian kid. I say kid, I'm talking about, he's a Canadian product. You know, he played for the Toronto Lynx. So, you know, I want to see him succeed because we need more Canadian talent in the front offices as well as on the field. But I don't know if he's been given the tools to do so. You can see he was trying to make them win now with all the off-season stuff that they did this off-season. And, you know, in December and January, they were getting a lot of veterans. They were putting together a team that looked like, on the paper, they should be very attack-minded and very dynamic. It just didn't come together on the field. But you can see he's under pressure to produce. And it would be a shame if he were to be fired as well, because I think that you see what he's trying to do, but I don't know if he's being hamstrung by other things above him, or if that's just the way Orlando is. I don't know. I'm just speculating. But it's unfortunate that a city and a club with so much potential is being squandered like that. But, you know, we keep drawing the parallels to TFC. TFC eventually got their you-know-what together, so maybe things can happen like that in Orlando as well.
One day I'm going to do a special where a whole bunch of us talk about Mo Johnston, but that's an aside for another day. Rudy, let's end with the Wayne Rooney question. At this point, he would have played a couple weeks. He did certainly have, I don't know, impressive is a strong way to put it, but he's certainly a solid debut where he's, I think, opened up some more space and was not nearly the disaster fitness-wise that a lot of people thought he might be. I always thought it was a little silly to suggest of MLS fans that Wayne Rooney couldn't have an impact in this league, but I want to get your position, having seen him play a game so far when we record this, and just sort of what your thoughts are, expand on them, what you think he's going to do in this league this year.
Yeah, I mean, he played in the you know, the final Alphonso Davies game before this whole thing, the one that Alphonso Davies scored that ridiculous stunner. That was my takeaway from that game. But Wayne Rooney played well. He played well in that game. He when he came on, I believe it was in the 60th or 50th minute or whatever it was, you could see the class that he has on the ball. And even off the ball, he was kind of opening up space for his teammates. I think Paul Areola got a couple of goals basically directly from what Wayne Rooney was doing, you know, helping open up and unlock the opposing defense. And, you know, he wasn't a direct threat himself, but he was making the teammates around him better. And, you know, against Atlanta in the following game, I think he was hung out to dry and a little bit on an island. First of all, why was he starting his second game? Even Zlatan didn't do that, and I think Zlatan, to me, is a much better player at this stage in his career than Rooney is, even though Zlatan's older. I think right now, I think Zlatan's a better player. But even Zlatan didn't start right away for LA Galaxy. So why was Wayne Rooney starting in his second game on turf in Atlanta against the best team in the league right now, a team that plays super, super athletic style of soccer? You know, high press, they play at 100 miles an hour. That's something you don't want to have Wayne Rooney do, especially when he's playing up top alone by himself. I think it was a 4-2-3-1 they were set up. And either way, he was the lone striker. He was asked to do a lot of defending from the front, just because that's the way Atlanta forces players, other teams to do in Atlanta, and even on the road, but especially in Atlanta. And I think it was unfair of Ben Olsen to ask him that in his second game when he's clearly not match fit. And, you know, he you kind of saw it towards the end of the first half. He was just struggling. And then Darren Maddox came in and looked like a much better player than Wayne Rooney, which is incredible to say, just because of the fitness issue and the fact that right now Darren Maddox is a much more athletic player and he can kind of match pace for pace the Atlanta for the Atlanta players. I think it was a good and bad debut so far for Wayne Rooney, if you want to kind of talk about the first game versus the second game. But I do think that he's going to make that team better. He's going to have the advantage of not having to travel so much, because that's one of the things that hampers European players who aren't used to that. You know, he's not going to have to travel to the West Coast as often. He's not going to have to go across time zones that often, because DC United, of course, opened a new stadium where they basically played half of their season on the road, so now they're in their half of the season where they play, they've played most of their games at home. So he's going to have the advantage of being able to play a lot of games at home where he didn't have to travel. So he's going to, you know, he's just going to be able to train with a team, you know, sleep in his own bed wherever his new house is in Washington or in the Washington area. And that's it. He won't have to deal with too much of the time zones and the climate changes and the turf changes and whatnot that a lot of European stars struggle with in their first year. So I think that's going to be advantageous to him. But I do think that Ben Olsen is going to have to be a little bit more tactically flexible with him, because if what we saw in Atlanta is a precursor to what we're going to see teams do to him from going forward, where they force him to defend a lot more than he should, even though I do think he's a good defender, and forced him to run a lot more than he should at this stage in his career, then, you know, they're not going to get the best out of out of Wayne Rooney. Maybe Ben Olsen needs to think about partnering him up with Darren Maddox or someone else up front for stretches of games, and not stick to this one tactical formation that they have. That's for the future to decide and for Ben Olsen to figure out. But I do think that Wayne Rooney is going to make this team better. He's shown it already in the first game. He showed it a little bit in the second game, but I think it was overall a poor game for the entire team, him included. But I think now that he'll be able to settle into a long stretch of home games where he's only playing at Audi Field for the most part, I think that he'll be able to settle into the league quite quickly and show his class in the ball. He's not going to be the guy who's running 100 miles an hour. He's not that guy anymore. He's not the guy who's going to beat anyone for pace. But his class in the ball and his ability to bring teammates in, we've already seen it in the first game. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that going forward.
All right, Rudy Schuler, been good with your time. Oop, another dog here. Dog says hi. Rudy Schuler, good with your time as always. Where can the listeners read your work?
I'm all over at sportingnews.com /CA. If you just type in sportingnews.com, it'll be there. I don't really write about soccer anymore. So, I write a little bit about everything now. So I'm more of a generalist now, but I'm still on the soccer thing mostly. And I'll still be focusing a lot on TFC and, looking at Alphonso Davies and the Canadian national team going forward and all those things that are important to Canadian soccer fans. But, you can catch me there.
All right, that's it for soccer today. Join us back tomorrow, and thanks for listening. The dog says hi. All right, you're in the box tomorrow,
yeah.
Right? All right, I'll see you.
Yes, I am, for the first time in, 2 months.
I think I'm going to be in for a little bit, but I might actually be in a ticket, too. So we'll see. Anyway, I'll probably see you. All right,
yeah.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Bye.